On today's show, Josh and Marcus break down a huge win for the Nets over the Houston Rockets. Also talk about some signs that the Nets are using, Kenny Atkinson's weird habit, and also Kevin Durant's interview on First Take coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, in a much better mood as we celebrate the Nets 123-116 victory over the Houston Rockets than I was on our last podcast. And joining me to celebrate my newfound happiness, it's my co-host, my partner in crime, Marcus Barahal. Hey, Marcus, what's up?
Hey, Josh. Not much. I'm good. The Nets won yesterday, so that's awesome.
I know. Winning is cool. Winning is very cool. I think neither of us were super bullish on the Nets' chances in this game against Houston, and the first kind of 14-18 minutes was really much of the same. Just horrific, mind-boggling turnovers. I think they had 10 in the first quarter alone, which is really something if you think about it, because 10.5 is pretty bad also. But they got it together. You know, Garrett Temple went on a really nice run. Torian Prince was red hot to start the game and had some big contributions. Guys like Joe Harris were making plays. Caris LeVert settled down after some poor turnovers. And this was Kyrie Irving's probably not his best game as a Net. Finished with 22 points and 10 assists, but wasn't super efficient and had a lot of turnovers. And it's great to see the Nets come up with a huge win against a very talented team when Kyrie's not at his absolute best.
Yeah, Kyrie got off to like a terrible start. I think he had 5 turnovers in the first quarter. But like you said, it was those other guys who really stepped up. Torian Prince was like incredible all game. Joe Harris, like his defense and rebounding was really underrated. Like he was guarding Harden on a couple of possessions. I know it was mostly LeVert and Prince doing that, but he did step up also. And Jared Allen looked really good on defense, like on the weak side coming over. I know he didn't like jump out of the box score, his numbers don't, but I felt like he made a huge impact defensively. And maybe that was also partially just because DeAndre Jordan like didn't have his best game like by far. But yeah, Jared Allen I thought looked really good also.
Yeah, and one comment on the Jared Allen thing. I think he made some nice plays, but there were a few things that I take issue with. I mean, on the last possession when Kyrie hit that three to ice it, Jared Allen was just standing in the strong side corner, and it just allowed Kyrie's whoever was guarding Jared Allen to double Kyrie. And Jared Allen, it took him like 5 seconds to realize, hey, I probably shouldn't stand here. There were a lot of times when he helped off PJ Tucker in the corner, which is not someone you want to help off. You'd rather someone on the Nets just try to play one-on-one without Allen coming over to help. So there's still some instinctual things that I get frustrated with, but overall I did think he had a nice game. Obviously his weak side rim protection is excellent, and he was a very active screener and allowed the Nets to get some good looks spotting up from three with some of the screens he set against the Rockets perimeter players.
Yeah, and you mentioned his weak side defense too, but like it's hard to like say this in a game where they gave up 116 points, but the defense was so much better in this game, and that's really the reason that they won, was because of that defense in the second and third quarters just kind of limiting Houston. That allowed the Nets to go on runs, and it allowed them to get stops and then leak out in transition, which made the offense flow a lot easier. And I thought that, yeah, this was like their best defensive game of the season, even though they gave up 116 points.
Right. No, I think that makes sense. And I feel like when you look at the Nets defense, they're probably going to have an easier time defending guards and like maybe smaller wings, just because they do have a lot of options to throw at them. LeVert is a guy that's pretty solid on defense, good against point guards. Prince has the tools to defend most threes, even though his effort isn't always there. Joe Harris is like a sturdy, solid guy to have. Dinwiddie, when he gets into it, can be pretty good. And obviously Garrett Temple as well, and we'll break down his performance. But I think the one thing that Houston doesn't have, they don't have a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, like a Sabonis, even a guy like Jonas Valanciunas, who's a bruiser with a soft touch from the outside. And those seem like that's going to be the kind of the archetype that's going to give the Nets a lot of trouble this year. But fortunately, that wasn't kind of a player that Houston has at its disposal, even though they do have a lot of weapons.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about that at the end of the last podcast, just looking ahead to this game, where they do have Clint Capella, who's really talented. But like Ian Eagle said during the broadcast, this is like the Spider-Man meme, Jared Allen and Clint Capella. So they kind of like cancel each other out, I felt like. And yeah, that allowed the Nets to just play smaller on everyone else and really limit Houston by playing that defense that we saw Milwaukee start, I think, last year on James Harden, where they're like way overshading. I know the Jazz have done it too. And that really just forced him into like either drives or like tough sidestep threes, like going to his right, which is not the way he wants to go.
Yeah. And I'm looking now, the Rockets shot 12 of 48 from three, and the Nets shot 19 of 32. So the fact that this game was even somewhat close is really a testament to Harden's ability to get to the free throw line and set up guys like Daniel House, who had a good game. PJ Tucker drained some shots. So even though Harden had a horrible night shooting the ball, and Eric Gordon, shockingly, only 3 points and just a terrible stat line in 30 minutes of game action, the fact that it was even close just kind of goes to how powerful Harden and the rest of the Rockets system is.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I didn't even know Ben McLemore was still in the league, and he hit like two first quarter threes, and it was, yeah, I was stunned.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't give Hartenstein some minutes.
No Cephalosha action either.
I know. They have basically the whole Oklahoma City gang back together besides Nick Collison. Maybe they'll get him out of retirement. And then also, of course, KD, who's sitting on the Nets sidelines. But yeah, I mean, this was the kind of game the Nets are going to need to win. Like, Torian Prince, the guy can really shoot the ball. I mean, he has his flaws, but he played an awesome game. What do you think of the bench kind of decisions that Kenny made? And we'll get to some questionable decisions that Kenny made, but I actually like that he shortened the rotation. I think Nwaba has played better than Garrett Temple leading up until this game, but Kenny made the decision to say, hey, we're going to shorten the rotation from basically 10 to 9, excluding Jana Musa getting a couple minutes where he was pretty poor, but really just riding with 8 guys even in the second half. Do you like the decision to shorten the rotation there?
Yeah, I was going to say, it felt like Kenny listened to the podcast, because that's exactly what you suggested last time, was to shorten the rotation and to like try Musa out early, which is like exactly what he did. Although Musa was terrible, like you said. But I liked the decision. I thought that it allowed the guys to get into more of a rhythm, and there weren't as many times where there's just like one ball handler out there, one of those three guys in Dinwiddie, LeVert, or Kyrie, just kind of left to do everything on their own. Kenny did put more situations out there where there were two of them out there at a time, and I think that that's like a huge key. Like you saw with Houston, Mike D'Antoni really staggers it so that one of Russell Westbrook and James Harden is always out there at least. And with the Nets, Kyrie is like in that same class, but the other two guys aren't quite there. They're like a step or two below that. So I think having like two of those three out there can kind of replicate what the Rockets are doing in terms of staggering their two stars.
Yeah, and especially with the way Dinwiddie is playing right now. I mean, the guy is really struggling. LeVert's kind of been up and down this season, but Dinwiddie, the last couple games, is really his shot selection can always be questionable, and he's definitely kind of a volatile player, but he just doesn't have the same kind of ability to take it to the rim that he did last year, where he'd get so many blowbys and easy layups. There were a couple possessions in the fourth quarter of this game where two possessions in a row he didn't pass and got stripped going to the basket. You know, you have to, even if you're going to be the one ending up with the ball at the end of the clock, you have to at least shift the defense around, get other guys involved. It can't just be you bring the ball up, hang out for 15 seconds, and then make your move. You have to get other guys involved and at least shift the defense and see where things go, because it's ultimately going to make your job easier when you're the one creating at the end of the shot clock. And Dinwiddie really seems kind of lost, and especially had some jumpers where he just bricked them last night on pretty decent looks from three. And the Nets need him to get going and be a consistent offensive force like he's shown to be in the past.
Yeah, it's weird because there were like multiple times, like you said, where he got the switch and he had Capella on him like on the wing. And I was just thinking, like, just blow right by him. And he kind of, maybe it was because PJ Tucker was like doing a great job off ball defensively, like kind of shading in, but it felt like he would drive and then kind of take a step back mid-range shot near the baseline. Like, I felt like that happened multiple times in the game, and that's just not really his game. He needs to either recognize that help is there and kick it out to the more open shooter, or just try to keep blowing past and get to the basket. But I think they said like right at the end of the broadcast that the Nets had no points from the mid-range, which I'm assuming is like just non-paint shots and non-three-pointers, which I guess I like that, but they're still taking those shots. They just didn't go in.
LeVert did have some floaters in the lane, but the thing with Dinwiddie, I think you make a good point. Like, he's trying to almost set his, especially when he's a big man on him, he's trying to set him up too much. Like, you are one of the fastest players in the league, and you, with your length, you have an extremely long gait. Just kind of go triple threat position and blow by him. They're not going to be able to keep up with you. You don't need to kind of Once he starts dribbling and then tries to set the guy up, it's giving the defender the advantage because it's taking away that triple threat option. So I'd like him to be a bit more decisive, like I think he was most of last year. You know, when he first got back from his thumb injury last year, he kind of struggled a bit. He wasn't really the same, so maybe it's something to do with that. But I mean, Spencer's still a phenomenal player. He's one of my favorite players to watch on the team, even though he can be a bit frustrating. So I'm pretty confident that he'll be able to get it back on track.
Yeah, part of me wonders if it's just like watching Kyrie and LeVert like get by guys more so with their handle and like that kind of thing, as opposed to just like straight line drive speed. Like, I wonder if he's just trying to like make a flashy play as opposed to just like the most efficient, just like run right by the guy.
He wants to be part of the gang.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's maybe. But he needs to get back to doing what he's doing, you know, just kind of being a really good catch-and-shoot three-point guy, can hit deep threes, but really his bread and butter is just kind of blowing by big men, getting to the basket, getting to the foul line, and, of course, complaining. That's always going to be Spencer Dinwiddie's brand. Mark, so one thing that happened during the game last night, they showed Kenny Atkinson, and there was a spotlight on him, and I think everyone kind of watched in horror as he was picking his ear and then like spreading it across his lip. And I saw someone say, this is some sort of new earwax chapstick. It was one of the most grotesque things I've ever seen. Can we figure out any explanation for this?
No, I don't have any. I saw someone on Twitter say that like you spend a week with Kyrie and this is what's become of Kenny. It was really weird. I don't have much else to say.
It was gross. Weird. I mean, listen, whatever you want to do in the privacy of your own home, Kenny, sure, go do it, but not on a national TV game. It wasn't even just a Yes Network game. This is embarrassing for the Nets community as a whole.
Yeah, if they had lost this game and had that happen, that could have been really bad. Thankfully, they at least played well on the court.
I know. That was a blessing in disguise. Do you think someone brings it up to him after? Like, how does that work?
If I was a reporter, I would definitely ask about that. That's like the kind of stuff that I would be interested in.
Yeah, or if you're like one of the Nets PR guys, it's like, hey man, you gotta cut this out. This isn't cool.
Right. Yeah, because I've never noticed that before. I don't know if that's like a new thing, maybe.
Oh God, please no. I hope not. He was doing a couple weird things. Let's talk about the signs also. So the Nets had a pretty nice lead at the end of the fourth. They were up by about 7 or 8, and really, in any of these types of situations, I think the thing that teams do that really screws them over is that they're not just fine with letting a team get an easy two. They really just try to guard the 3-point line as much as they should, and it can lead to threes happening, maybe even a 4-point play. But the Nets were just saying, hey, I'm going to play right up on these guys and let them drive to the basket and get an easy layup, because twos can't beat us at this point. The Rockets would need threes. And kind of the motivator behind this was Kenny Atkinson holding up a sign, like a college football coach, with a picture of Dennis Scott 3D and then a big X through it.
I love this so much. I thought this was great. There's like a whole article on ESPN about it. DeAndre Jordan talking about like Jock Vaughn's involvement in the creation of it. Nets assistant coach Jock Vaughn. And I just thought it was so funny, but also like, I don't know why it hasn't happened before. Like, yeah, it's like a little goofy and a little wacky, but like, it's a pretty effective way to communicate to your team. Like, you can't always hear stuff in an NBA arena, especially like down the stretch in a tight game. Like, the crowd is going crazy. It's hard to communicate. You only have so many timeouts. Like, if this is a way to effectively tell the guys what you want them to be doing without needing to burn a timeout, like, I say go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think it was really funny. And then just like, you know, a lot of people might say, hey, like NBA players should know not to do this, but time and time again, it's proven that they don't, you know, again, they're in the heat of the moment. They might not, they might not be looking at the score and they might think it's a 2-point game versus a 3-point game or something like that. So being able to have something very overt up there, you know, why not? If it can help the team, get even a better chance of winning by 1%. Something like that. I mean, that would be a lot, but just do it. You know, positive reinforcement to these players and reinforcing good habits, especially for a team like the Nets, where they do have a lot of kind of players that haven't played together, some younger guys on the court. When you think about a Jarrett Allen, a Rhodey Kurucs, yeah, even still guys like LeVert and Dinwiddie are not exactly seasoned veterans in this league. So I think anything that you can do to kind of ensure that there's no stupid mistakes is going to be awesome. Now he just needs a sign saying no turnovers.
Make your free throws, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Kenny could also have a sign saying Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below the belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code locked on at manscaped.com. I know David Locke would approve of that sign.
So Josh, I don't know if you saw this, but Kevin Durant, Brooklyn net great at this point, he was on ESPN's First Take this week, and he got asked about a lot of stuff. He talked about a lot of stuff. There was just a ton like said during this interview, which is like rare for KD in the post Bill Simmons podcast era for him to like really speak openly with the media. So it was super interesting. He talked about how Draymond Green maybe played a part in him deciding to leave Golden State, about how he and Kyrie can kind of relate on how they're treated by the media, how he thinks Kyrie's treated unfairly by the media. So what were your biggest takeaways from this? Did you see this? What'd you think of this?
Yeah, I saw it, and I think it makes sense. You know, Draymond is a very volatile personality, and it's clear that the relationship between him and KD just got untenable. And KD, you know, right or wrong, if he should have gotten credit or not, or the credit that he thinks he deserved for winning those championships in Golden State, he was never going to be the guy there, given the success that the team had before he got there. So, you know, when people are constantly degrading you and really just kind of getting on you, you're not going to want to be there. So, you know, I think this was something that we all kind of knew was going to happen, but it is very refreshing to see KD be very candid, especially with Stephen A., who he has a tumultuous history with. But I think, what do you think about this? Do you think KD's ever going to go on the Bill Simmons podcast again? Because I know Simmons has really been down on Kyrie, and obviously that's KD's boy. So I feel like it would almost be counterintuitive for KD to go on there, just given some of the grief that Simmons has given Kyrie basically the last 8 to 10 months.
Yeah, I don't think so. I feel like he's had guys on before, who, like he had Kyrie on before a while ago, and then he's had guys like Draymond on, Steph Curry on. So, but he's never had like LeBron on because he kind of doesn't really like him. That's like his whole deal. So yeah, and I feel like KD is a guy who, if he like isn't going to gain anything from the interaction, he's not really going to do it. And I feel like with his new media company and like with the boardroom and that kind of stuff, that's kind of his new way to communicate with fans. And I think that it was probably more of like a novelty back when he was doing it with Bill. So I think the need isn't really there for him. And then, like you said, Bill hasn't exactly been like super positive towards KD the last couple months. So I and Kyrie for that matter. So I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's kind of outgrown the platform, and you know, just given that KD has Rich Kleiman now to think through a lot of his media endeavors, he's going to be trying to control the messaging himself and not really have to go through another moderator to do that. So it's interesting that he did the segment on First Take, but I guess, you know, he's just trying to promote himself. I thought it was just a little weird that he popped up there, frankly.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like more of like something you would maybe do in the off season.
Exactly. But, you know, I think he also wants to be able to control the messaging on his return and all that, because there's been a lot of speculation. And even if he does return this season, it's not going to be for another 5 months or so. So I don't know. Maybe he just wants to keep his name in the spotlight. He said that he's not thinking about return, just trying to focus on rehabbing, and that it's a slow, gradual process. So didn't make any kind of proclamations about making a return, still kind of sticking to the messaging that he's basically not going to come back. And then if he does, it will just be the cherry on top for the Nets.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's how the whole team kind of has to look at this year. Like, if he is able to like beat all the timelines and the estimates, that's great, but you can't count on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And it's good to see, I guess, the Nets continuing to get some media coverage, you know, whether it's the earwax thing or KD interview, the Nets are out there. We can definitely say that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this sign seems like it's going to become a great NBA Twitter meme.
Mm-hmm, so. Absolutely. No, I'm very excited for that. And so maybe we'll see the sign tonight. The Nets have a game against the Pistons. Both teams are on back-to-back. Detroit lost to the lowly Bulls last night in Chicago. So what are you expecting from this game? Blake Griffin looks probably unlikely to play. He hasn't played yet this year. They haven't said one way or the other at the time of recording this if he will be playing tonight. But obviously, Pistons can still do some damage. They have Derrick Rose, who's been awesome this year, averaging 21 a game, really efficient. And then obviously Andre Drummond is the type of guy that can give Jarrett Allen at least a lot of trouble just with his pure strength and size on the inside and being able to collect offensive rebounds.
Yeah, I think Blake and Reggie Jackson, I think, are both supposed to be out, but Andre Drummond, like you said, is going to be the main guy to stop. And then on the Nets side, I'm hoping for maybe this is like a spark for Dinwiddie. He's always plays well against his former team, so maybe this can get him going.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that. And really, you mentioned Reggie Jackson. That's, I think, that the fact that he's out is probably actually bad for the Nets because he's just abysmal. But Dinwiddie and the Nets guard should have a good game. Detroit's not the best defensive team from the perimeter. They do have guys like a Bruce Brown type, who is a really excellent kind of wing defender and can defend some smaller guards and really get into it. But besides that, you know, Derrick Rose is going to do much of that. Tim Frazier is very small and a liability on defense. Kennard, defense obviously isn't his forte. So the Nets should be able to get this win, and you have to think they're not going to shoot the ball as well from three as they did last night, but they can still generate some quality looks. And against a team like the Pistons, they definitely have by far the best player in this game. So it would be great to see them get a win when both teams are on a back-to-back and really be able to right the ship from some of those ugly losses that we had a week ago.
Right, yeah, just to be able to pull back to 500 and kind of, like you said, right the ship before things get too out of hand.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We will be covering it. Marcus and I will be watching the game together, so maybe we'll get some tweets going from the account. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. Of course, please subscribe to the podcast. Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, we will be there. Rate us, review us, tell us what we're doing right, wrong, and until next time, be well.
Bye.